All right, morning. Today's daf is daf Samach Zion in Chulin. This should be the end of the third parak today. We're not going to finish, but we'll get close to it. We'll get somewhere to the middle of Samach Zion Amud Beis. Right now, we start the sugya today on Samach Vav Amud Beis. Tanur Rabbanan, we are right in the middle of the Amud. It's finished yesterday with the Agdol Torah V'Yadir, and we're in the topic of fish. So we learned yesterday that by fish there are two simanim that the Torah provides for us in order to establish that the fish is a kosher fish, and that is snapir v'kas keses. The Gemara spent a couple of lines discussing what those words actually mean. The snapir is a reference to the fins, and the kas keses is a reference to the scales. The kas keses, the Gemara quotes another pasuk from Shmuel, where the Torah over there refers to the Navi over there refers to kas keses as being some sort of armor. And just like the armor worn by the soldiers, so the kaskesis must be some sort of scales that protect the fish. Okay. Scales that develop later in the fish's life, scales that fall off as you pull them out of the water. The Gemara discussed both of those yesterday, and the Gemara on both of them concluded that would be fine. Such a fish would be fine. Tanur Rabbanan, we're now going to pick it up right where we left off yesterday. In the middle of the Amud, Mimashva Shenamar Echol Es Sheishlo, Sharmei Ani Atachol Et Sheinlo. We're going to be focusing a lot of this morning on two psukim in Chumash and Parsha Shmini, where the Torah tells us, Torah seems to be somewhat repetitive. In Pasuk Tes, the Pasuk says like this, Zeh tochlu, here's what you eat, right, in the positive. Mikol asher b'mayim, mikol asher lo snapir v'kas keses, b'mayim. It has to be in water, it has to have fins, it has to have scales. B'yama v'nachalim, osam tochelu. If it's in the yamim, in the oceans, or nachlim, or if it's in the rivers, that you eat. V'chol asher ein lo, okay, that's pasuk tes. So pasuk tes is the positive. Here's what you do eat. And it gives us signs to identify what is a kosher fish. Okay, we're going to be talking really about anything in the water. Right? Any small living creatures in the water. V'chol asher ein lo, now we're up to pasuk yud. And if it doesn't have snapir v'kaskeses, it doesn't have fins and scales, bayamim v'nachalim, in the oceans and in the rivers, mikol sheretz ha-mayim, u'mikol nefesh ha-chaya sher ba-mayim, sheketz heim lachem, they're going to be sheketz, they're going to be forbidden to you. Okay. Pasuk tes, pasuk yud. Now, let's be honest, meaning what the Torah did for us is it provided us a basis in which we're giving specific guidelines what you can eat and what you can't in the water. But the truth of the matter is that either pasuk by itself would have been sufficient. What's the first pasuk say? Pasuk test says, this is what you're going to eat. You got to look for fins and scales. Okay, and now I know. If it doesn't have fins and scales, I'm not allowed to eat it. And then pasuk yud, basically the same information, just from the other side. The pasuk yud says, and here's what you don't eat. If it doesn't have fins and scales, don't eat it. Well, okay, so I could have, either pasuk by itself would have been enough to inform us what's kosher and what's not kosher in the world of fish. So the Gemara is bothered exactly by this question. So, Tan Rabbanu, Mimashma Shenamar Achol Chieshlo, Shamei Ani Alto Chol Chieshlo. Mimashma Shenamar Alto Chol Chieshlo, Shamei Ani Achol Chieshlo. V'lama Shan'an, so why does the Torah repeat? La'avor alav be'aseh velosaseh. So the Gemara's answer is, yeah. Torah is double dipping, not double dipping, but repeating itself simply in order to provide for us one positive commandment, one negative commandment. Now, the negative commandment, that's clear, meaning if it doesn't have fins and scales, don't eat it. Okay? That's very clear. What's the asay? What's the positive commandment of eating fish? Meaning, when I sit down on Friday night and we enjoy, right, first course, fish, so are we fulfilling a mitzvah asay from the Gemara? The simple pshat is here. You're fulfilling a mitzvah asay by eating the kosher fish. Maybe the mitzvah saseh is an identification, meaning that there's a positive command to identify what's kosher and what's not kosher.
Everybody has fish from
Shabbat. I don't think so. No, probably has more to do with Kabbalah than with the mitzvah saseh. Okay, tochlu mikol sher b'mayim, matam lamer. Okay. Eat anything which is in the water. Ma tamalomer was coming to teach us. Shiyoch v'hol v'hitter b'meforish v'hitter b'stam. Ma kishehitter b'meforish lo hitter l'bekelim. Av kishehitter b'stam lo hitter l'bekelim. Now there's going to be a heter. Okay, stay tuned because for a good amount now of the upcoming Gemara, the Gemara is going to be treating us to a specific heter. You're allowed to eat some sort of aquatic animal, something in the water, even though it doesn't have fins and scales. Okay, there's a heter. Now, what the Gemara is going to do is it's going to refer to these two psukim, pasuk tes, pasuk yud. Again, the entire daf today focuses around those two psukim in Parsha Shmini. One of them the Gemara calls sasum, and the other one it calls mefurash. Explicit and implicit. Now, to be fair and honest, we don't know, we really don't, which one is implicit, which one is explicit. The Gemara later on will ask exactly that question, which is explicit, which is implicit. Okay, so I'm going to be talking in terms that you and I don't understand right now, and even later on, we're going to try to understand it. It's going to be a little bit difficult. But here's what we know for sure. There are two psukim in Shmini. The Gemara calls one of them explicit, the other one is implicit. But the point is basically the following. There is a heter, which the Gemara hasn't taught us yet, but assumes that we know about it. That is the way of the Gemara. And that if you have water, not water that didn't come from an ocean, not water that didn't come from a river, those are the two mentioned in the Torah. Yamim v'nachalim. Not those, but rather water that is in a kli, water in a vessel, right? Water collected in a barrel, water collected in a cup. If there are little aquatic animals in that water, even though, huh?
Amoeba?
It doesn't have to be microscopic. It could be totally visible. You're allowed to ingest those types of animals. Okay? Because you hit the bistam, you hit the levikilim, and I'm the rabbos, born sheikh and amaras. How do I know that the heter even extends? And it extends even to bodies of water that are in the ground. Meaning the heter is by kalim, that everyone understands. But the heter may even extend to bodies of water that are in the ground, notably a pit, a cave, a cistern. So the Torah says, Mikol asher b'mayim, you're allowed to eat. Meaning that the pasuk of Tochlo Kol Asher B'mayim is teaching us that even if it's in a stationary body of water, you're allowed to ingest those aquatic animals. Okay, what the Gemara has done is right.
Just
eat
the lobster in the aquarium.
it's a good. It was a good try. Now there's a lot to ask. Hold off on all questions, because really what the Gemara has done is kind of reverse the information. Meaning, first we're going to establish that there is a heter, and then we're going to go back and we're going to talk about how expansive the heter is. Okay. Let me first explain it from a very simple standpoint. It's the best way to do so. And then we'll do it very technically. Okay. Again, a very technical daf today. Klalo Prat, Ribu Imiut. I feel like we always come back to this issue. It's one of the more popular discussions that takes place in Shas. You know, I point this out again and again. The more times I say it, the more times I do understand it. But just even before we get technical, just understand that the Torah in these two psukim in Parsha Shmini teach us about what you got to look for in fish. But the Torah doesn't just simply say, here's the fish you got to look at. The Torah already also says, here's the body of water that this has to be an issue in. Meaning, I'm going to read the psukim again. Anything in water, those are markers of the fish, simanim of the fish. But the Torah doesn't stop. Bamayim, in the water, biyamim uvanachalim, in oceans and in rivers. Right? In other words, the Torah tells us not just what to look for in the fish, but what to look for in terms of which body of water we're talking about. Meaning that the Torah says that these simanim only become critical, only become important, only when you're dealing with these particular bodies of water. In other words, in other bodies of water, not oceans and not rivers, so it's okay. Meaning you can ingest little fish in these, even though they don't have snapir v'kaskesas. Okay. Now there's a lot to discuss over here, and there's a lot to understand, but just, I'm giving you really the entire Gemara today in its simplest form. It's not just critical in terms of what's on the fish, what does the fish look like, it's also critical what kind of waters they grow in. Because the Torah goes out of its way to say, yamim unachalim, oceans and rivers. Okay, so, again, Mamayim just simply means in water. So it doesn't, mayim itself doesn't mean anything. In fact, the Gemara later on will say it's probably a cloud, if anything. It's a cloud. Yamim unachalim, however, now the Torah is identifying what bodies of water are we looking at. Meaning, when is this an issue that I have to look at snapir v'kaskeses? And right now, in the simplest form, it's Yamim Unachlim, oceans and rivers. So, wait, just wait. Let's go to the other extreme, meaning if we're talking about oceans and rivers, like what is the furthest thing away in terms of a body of water that's from oceans and rivers? So the answer is going to be Kalim, right? Water in a barrel. Water in a barrel. Now, how did the water get there? If you scoop the water up from the ocean, I don't think that counts. I don't think.
Right.
So in other words, say the barrel was outside, it collected rainwater. That's the furthest thing away from Yamim Unachlim. Meaning that is not a natural body of water. Okay, that's artificial. You made the utensil. The utensil's not even in the ground, and the water's in that utensil. Okay, so that's the opposite extreme. And then, of course, what the nuance of today's daf is going to be is that there's a lot of things in the middle. So you have an ocean, and you have a cup of water. Okay. And there's a lot in the middle to discuss. So that's going to be today's daf. We're going to be discussing all those bodies of water that are somewhere between ocean and a cup of water. Let's see the Gemara inside. The Gemara is going to do this in a number of different formats. So let's start it off. Talmud Lomar, okay. Heichan Hitzir, Bekalim. Okay, so first and foremost, how do we know that there's this heter? So the Gemara explains as follows. Dechsiv is etochlu mikol asher b'mayim. B'yamim v'nachlim hu dechi islay echol, delay islay lo sechol. Right? The Gemara starts off with the observation that we made. Only when the fish is in the oceans and the lakes, then and only then do you have to look for fins and scales. However, habekalim, but if you're not in the ocean and the lake, you're all the way on the other extreme of the spectrum. A cup of water, a barrel of water, even though it doesn't have any fins and scales, that's fine. Okay. So the Gemara says, okay, look, I know there's a difference between oceans and a cup of water. But the Gemara says maybe the difference lies in the following. Maybe in the ocean, I could check for fins and scales and eat it. Maybe in a cup of water or maybe in the barrel, even if it has fins and scales, I can't eat it. Maybe that's the distinction to make. So lo sakadacha, the Gemara immediately rejects that. Absolutely not tenable. Dichsi v'chol asher ein lo snapir v'kaskeses b'yamim v'nachlim mikol sheretz amayim b'yamim v'nachlim deleis lo secha habakelim afagav deleis lei echol. Because you have to look at what the starting point is. Meaning anytime you're going to make any deduction, you got to start off with a point of basis, right? A starting point. The starting point in the Torah is, the Torah tells us, if it doesn't have fins and scales and you're in the ocean, don't eat it. Okay, so now let's move back. No pun intended, but let's scale back now. So from that, if that's our starting point, so then I'm not allowed to eat. Now if I now just simply take that same animal, that same fish with no fins and scales and move it away from the Yamim Menachlim, then I'm allowed to eat it. So the Gemara immediately says, certainly the difference between being in the ocean and being in a cup of water is that in the ocean you're not allowed to eat it, and a cup of water you are allowed to eat it. Okay. Ve'ema. The Gemara now is going to make another suggestion. Ba'mayim klal b'yamim v'nachlim prat. Klalu prat, ein b'klal ela masha b'prat. Maybe the way to understand the sequence of the pasuk is through the method of klalu prat. Now remember, we talked about this just yesterday. Klalu prat means general specific. And if that's all you have, ein shebeklal ela ma shebeprat. The prat is just defining what's in the klal. So yamim v'nachlim in ne'itzim v'charitzim lo. So that would mean then that only if you're in the oceans, that's fine. Meaning then you can eat it. But ne'itzim v'charitzim. But if you're in a little canal in your backyard, right? A lot of us have canals in our backyard. But if you're talking about like a little ne'itz, a little groove in the ground. Right, so then no, then you wouldn't be allowed to eat it. So the Gemara says no. B'mayim chazer uklal. So the Gemara says this is not klal uprat. This is klal uprat uklal. Okay, now follow me carefully because this is going to be a little bit tricky. Okay, and now we'll get technical. So the Gemara now is understanding that the way to analyze the pasuk is through a methodology of klal
uprat.
Yeah, correct. You're asking the right question. So the The way to understand it is through the method of klal uprat uklal. Again, there are only two psukim to focus on for today's daf. So we're going to look at pasuk tes. It's that tochlu. Here's what you're going to eat. Mikol asher b'mayim, anything in water. Now, water is a klal, meaning we are talking about aquatic animals. Okay? Good. And then, kol asher lo snapir b'kaskeses b'mayim, anything that has fins and scales in water. So what we have now is what's called klal, followed immediately by klal.
Another klal.
And then the Torah is specific. By yamim v'nachalim osam tochelu. If you're in the ocean or if you're in the river, that you eat. So, here's the problem. Problem is very simple. Normally, when we say klal prado klal, it means generality, followed then by specific, followed then by generality. Here, the problem is obvious. It's generality, followed then by generality, followed then by specific. Okay. Now, with the invent of the computer and with Microsoft Word, so now everyone can picture this really easily. So what we're going to do is a little cut and paste. What we're going to do is we're going to take the prat that takes place after the second klal. We're going to cut it. We're not going to do this in the Torah. We'll leave the pasuk intact. But at least principally what we're going to do now is we're going to take it, we're going to highlight it, we'll cut it, and we'll put it right between the two klalim. The Gemara is about to ask, you can do that? And the Gemara's answer is, yeah, you can do that. So the Hani trei klali, so let's follow this in the Gemara. The Gemara makes this argument. Hani trei klali desmich la adadinenu. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. How did you do this? How did you make this a klal prado klal? And the Gemara's answer is, I'm a Ravina kedamri b'ma Rava. So Ravina says, yes, they say this in Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara quotes this numerous times. You'll see on the side of the Gemara, the number of times the Gemara quotes this. Kol makum sh'ata motzei shnei klalos asmuchim zel azeh. When you have two klalos that are next to one another. Hatel prat beinehem vidunam bechlal uprat uklal. So then what you could do is you could take the prat, hatel, take the prat, stick it between them, and now you have formulated a klal uprat uklal. So now, and then the Gemara spells it out. Bamayim klal. Bayamim v'nachlem prat. Bamayim chazer uklal. So now we have our standard klal uprat uklal. Klal uprat uklal yatadan elakein prat. So now we know how it works. It's ke'ena prat, meaning the two examples, oceans and rivers, they set up as prototypes. They're examples. Maha prat mefurash mayim novim, avkol mayim novim. And now we have to look, what's specific about mayim v'nachlim? Right now we get to ask the question. The Torah now earmarks these two bodies of water. They are mayim novim, they're flowing waters. They're flowing bodies of water. Right? A river is a flowing body of water, an ocean is a flowing body of water. Right, it's in constant flux. However, you have water in your cup, but we can even go one step further. You have water in the pit. Right, you dig a hole in the backyard. You have water in a pit. It's not flowing. It's not a flowing body of water. Therefore, in such a body of water, don't worry about snapir v'kaskeses. So, my rabbi. So, what are we coming to include over here? Chritzim v'ni'itzin li'isura u'maymiyet. So, chritzim v'ni itzim. So, if you have canals, so now canals are out because canals are flowing. If you have a pit, a well, or a cistern, now that's going to be fine because those are not flowing. Okay. So, this is our first approach of today. The first approach for today is going to be klal uprat uklal. The tricky part about it is that it doesn't really look on the Torah like klal uprat uklal. What we learned is that they say this in Eretz Yisrael, that's okay. Take the prat from afterwards, move it into the middle, and now you have klal uprat uklal. What is the prototype? Yamim unachlim. What does that teach us? That it has to be a flowing body of water. So if a body of water behaves like an ocean and river and that it flows, so then you have to snap your vikaskeses. Then you have to be selective about what fish you're looking for. If it doesn't flow, if it's a stationary body of water, like a cup of water, or even more than that, even like a pit, like a cistern, like a well, so then you don't have to look for snapir v'kaskeses, you can drink. Okay. The Gemara, before concluding on this matter, the Gemara makes one more attempt to challenge, to rebut. Ve'ema ma'aprat mefurash mayim gedelam agabe karka, v'kol mayim gedelam agabe karka. The Gemara says, well, look, let's analyze the prototype just one more time. The prototype is yamim v'nachlim. Maybe the Torah is just simply concerned about the waters in the ground. Maybe that's the only feature that we're looking at. So the Gemara, Rabbi, afilu bar shechnamaros liisura, and that would mean that any body of water in the ground, moving or stationary, you got to look for fins and scales. So the Gemara says, "My mir mei kalim," and the only allowance would be water that was collected in a cup or in any utensil that's out of the ground. So im kein tochlu maya hanilei. So the Gemara says no, because you see, we already knew that. Meaning, even before getting to the klalu pradu klal, we already knew that you're allowed to drink aquatic animals in a keli. We got that from tochlu, as we mentioned earlier this morning. So we didn't need the klalu pradu klal for that. We already knew that. So now we have a klalu pradu klal. It's got to be teaching us something. Some bodies of water you have to look for fins and scale. Some bodies of water you don't. So the distinction we're gonna lay down is whether it's moving or whether it's stationary, period. Okay? So that's approach number one for this morning. If now I have a stationary body of water, even if it's in the ground, like a well, like a cistern, like a pit, so there you don't have to be selective. You could simply consume the water, even with the whatever swimming in it inside, even if that which is swimming inside doesn't have fins and scales.
Yeah. We can do this no
yeah.
Where it is in the
right. Power. And you could see the Gemara on the bottom of the previous page where the Gemara cites about a half a dozen examples of this. But yes, that's correct. Okay, that's number one. Debei Rabbi Yishmael Tana. Now we're going to learn it now in a slightly different format using a different methodology. And that is the following. Bamayim, bamayim shtei pa'amim, ein ze klalu prat, elo riba umiyit. So Debei Rabbi Yishmael is going to teach this to us, but not using the method of klal uprat klal, but using the method of ribu yamiut. Okay. At this point in time now, you should ask me, I'm confused. Not that we're going to go through a different methodology, right? We've seen that before, but look who's offering this different methodology. It's Rabbi Yishmael. Don't we normally assign Rabbi Yishmael to be the one who says klal uprat klal, not ribu yamiut? And if you look at the margin of the Gemara, right, this particular question bothered the Rishonim. He quotes the Tosos and Shavuos. Tosos and Shavuos is bothered by this. He doesn't provide an answer. He just leaves it off as a question. Okay, so fine. So how do we assign this to Rabbi Shmuel? Unclear about that. But in the meantime, however, here we go again. Okay, this seems to be one of our favorite topics in Shas: the difference between Klal Uprat versus Ribu Umiyut. So let's first see the inside of the Gemara, and then we're going to explain a little bit better. Tana b'mayim shtei pa'amim, it says mayim twice. Ein ze klal uprat ela riba yamiut. So now, b'mayim riba, b'yamim uvanachlim miyet. So first we're going to start off with the mayim. That is a ribui. That's inclusive, all inclusive. Yamim uvanachlim now comes to be miyet. M'mayit comes to scale back. B'mayim chazer v'riba. So riba umiyut v'riba. Okay, so this is now falls under the category of ribui, miyut, or ribui. By the way, it sounds the same like klal uprat klal. In just a moment, I'm going to explain what the differences are. Riba hakol, so my rabbi, so we're coming to include everything, and what does that everything include? Chritzim v'ne'isim li'isura. It means even canals, even ditches. You have to look, if you pick up anything swimming in your canal and your ditch, you got to look for fins and scales. Umay miyut, barit shichin omaros lehetera. And what are we coming to exclude? Only stationary bodies of water. Barim sheichin ma'aras. So ema my riba barim sheichin ma'aras li'isura umay miyut miyut kelim. Again, the Gemara one more time, even in this methodology, looks to draw the line in a different location, not between moving bodies of water and stationary bodies of water, but maybe the difference lies in whether the water is in the ground versus water whether the water is above ground, meaning in a utensil. Im kein tochlu maya hanilei. So the Gemara eliminates this question the same way it did previously. Because Tochlu already taught us about Kalim. So now that we know Kalim, that you can eat aquatic animals in a Kli, even though it doesn't have fins and scales, so now we're back to, there has got to be some distinction to be made. And again, the Gemara says it's got to be stationary water versus not stationary water. So the Epochana, let's just finish the Gemara and then we're going to go to Rashi. The Epochana, So the Gemara basically makes the same point that I made previously. it got to be, if we're looking for fins and scales, and we know that the prototype is going to be bodies of water like oceans and like rivers, so if we're going to include other bodies of water, it's going to be canals and ditches because they flow. The water in the canal flows, much like the water in the ocean, much like the water in the river. However, stationary bodies of water, like a cistern, like a pit, like a well, they don't flow, so therefore they're on the other side. I don't have to look for fins and scales. Okay, Adkan, that's it. In other words, so those are our two approaches that we're going to use today. Either approach got us to the same place. Okay? Cisterns and pits, not a problem. You can eat whatever aquatic animals in there, even though it doesn't have fins and scales. Ditches and canals are going to be like rivers and oceans. They're flowing bodies of water, so therefore the only thing I can pick up from there are only going to be fish that have fins and scales.
What about lakes, according to
this? If it's a stationary body of water, there's no flow. If there's no in and there's no out and there's no movement, seemingly, right? I'm not 100% sure, but seemingly it'd be like, but yes, sir. Because can I help you understand in terms of svar, in terms of logic? I don't know. In terms of methodology, it's very easy. Because the Torah tells us that you have to look for fins and scales only in oceans and rivers. In moving bodies of water. Okay. And so what the Gemara does now methodologically is, okay, either way you're going to use it, klal uprado or ribu imiyut, whatever methodology you're going to use, the conclusion is it's got to be similar to what the Torah describes. Torah is describing oceans and rivers. Okay, so canal behaves like an ocean river in that it flows, right? A pit does not behave like an ocean and river. So therefore, you don't have to look for fins and scales. I'm not helping you understand. I'm just explaining how the methodology.
Why is Rabbi Ishmael using Yibu and Mu?
Yeah. So good. So Tosis asks that question. Tosis leaves off with a lack of understanding of how that happened. Okay. Right, the bugs in the water.
Bacteria,
right, okay.
Bacteria,
no, but when you transfer the water from the ocean to a bottle of water, that, in other words, that water is sourced from an ocean. So you're still going to have to look for fins and scales in order to eat it. The Gemara's discussed heter of kalim, and the Gemara's heter of a pit is talking about where it was rainwater that was collected. In other words, but just because you move the water from one source to another doesn't mean now it's new. You know, the water itself changes identity. Okay, let's do this, right? Let's do it briefly, but let's do this. What's the difference? What's the difference between klal uprado versus ribu imiyut? So let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi over here highlights. We've done this before. It's worth reviewing. It really will help us understand a little bit better. Rashi. Bamayim, beis pa'amim. You see where I am? It's the middle Rashi. It's the big Rashi in the middle of the page on Samach Zayim and Aleph. And Rashi over here writes, "Hol shnei klal smuchim kishehitol aprasha sheachareim beneim mida b'torah hi shelo tidona mechlal aprat ella beribu umiut delahachi palgin rachman laprat mechlal delo tidrusha mechlal aprat." Now Rashi goes on to explain, "V'ika ben ribu umiut laklal aprat." There are differences. Rashi says, what's the difference between ribu imiyut versus klal uprat? Dechi darshin and klal uprat. Because when you darshin klal uprat, have a prat perusho shel klala. The prat is a perush. If your methodology is klal uprat, so here you have generality, follow them by specific. The specific is your dictionary. It tells you, when I say general, I mean this. Okay, so for example, let's use our example. The Torah gives a generality. Anything in water. Water is obviously a klal. And then the Torah says, yamim unachalim. So let's go klal uprat. When I say water, I mean oceans and lakes. That's what I mean. That's it. Now, the aim of klal alamasha beprat. The afilo davar hadoma lo, ein lo lahavi. Okay. And there's nothing else to talk about. That's, of course, if we would have stopped. Meaning, so now, klal uprat, prat is the definition of klal. Good. Now we have klal uprat uklal. What happens with the next klal? Rashi goes on to explain. Ukishklal lecha klal sheni acher aprat, and now comes along your next klal, and it comes after the prat. Ahani la asuye midi de damele le prat. It helps. How does it help? Because now it's going to say anything similar to the prat. Meaning, if the Torah would have just stopped at prat, that's it. That's the definition, and we don't have, and there's nothing else to turn to. But once you have now another klal, it says, okay, look at the prat and anything similar to it.
It expands it,
but expands it to anything that has similar to it. Avakidar shinan ribuy amiyut. But if our methodology is not going to be klal or prat, but if the methodology is going to be ribuy miyut, lo pirush amiyut es a ribuy, el amiyut shlo tishmi mimenu hakol. Okay, but if you use a methodology of ribu emiut, so now it goes like this. We're going to use our example of bodies of water as because that's what we're talking about anyway. The Torah starts off with mayim, bodies of water. Okay, that means any aquatic animal and any body of water. Ribu. Now we're going to go next step, which is miut. But if you're learning ribu and miut, miut is not a definition. Miut just simply means scale it back. Right? Not all bodies of water. It's got to be things like yamim unachalim. Okay? Elazev hadomim lo. So, I need fins and scales. Where do I need fins and scales? In rivers and in oceans, and anything like rivers and oceans. Okay? Good. Now, if there's not a second ribui, meaning if you just stop ribui miut, so now I know. Oceans and rivers and anything like oceans and rivers. Okay. But vahani ribui sheni, then comes along your second ribui. Kol mili. Now basically that second ribui is saying all bodies of water. Vahani miuta la muute midi de lo dame le klal. And so now. Good. So basically now we are including all bodies of water. So what's the miut there to tell me? It has to be totally dissimilar to the example provided in the Torah. Meaning the example provided in the Torah is oceans and rivers. It has to be something that doesn't behave at all like an ocean and river. All right, the rest of Rashi. Right. So if you understand it well, which I think I do, who knows? But if you understand it well, so basically, ribu yomiut equals. Equals klal uprat uklal.
Okay, so what's the difference between ribui miut and ribui and klal uprat?
Right, so now klal uprat uklal basically says the example is the prototype, it's got to be similar to the prototype. Ribui miut ribui says no, throw prototype out the window. If the Torah wanted to teach us about prototype, the Torah would have just stopped ribui miut. Well, now that we have another ribui afterwards, throw out the prototype, meaning everything. And the only thing now that we're going to exclude is anything that has absolutely no connection with the example that was given. Meaning that we're going to go all the way to the other extreme. If it's not like the example at all, that's not in the discussion. But everything else, though, is in the discussion.
How is that different than
Klal uprat? You're not talking about major differences, but you're talking about. The problem is in this particular example, the Gemara comes out to the same conclusion. So that using that formula in this particular example is going to be tricky, right? That's where I struggle in this particular page of Gemara. In concept, however, I totally understand because in concept, in klal uprat uklal, I still have to look at the examples and say I have to match similar. Okay, fine, right? To what degree you have to match? Okay, that's obviously going to be touchy. Ribui miut ribui, you don't have to match. There's no need to match. Ribui miut ribui just simply says.
So what's the common denominator?
It's like similar.
Any not just similar, everything. It comes to include everything. And then, so, okay, but the Torah.
If, includes everything. Why even have a ribui miri?
Because it does. In other words, if something is just so dissimilar, it like it's what's Rashi's terminology? Elamia shalom mashmi min akol elazeva dama v'lav ribui. I'm sorry. Shenili asui kol mila v'ahani miyuta lemaati midi de lo dama leklal. Something which is absolutely dissimilar. That's the only thing that comes to exclude. But I don't have to play the matching game. Meaning basically everything, except for the most extreme example, that which lies on all the way at the other end of the spectrum.
Who determines that?
That's where it's a fair question. That's where interpretation comes into play. Meaning, we have these methodologies, and then, you know, the based in Agadol now are the ones who are the interpreters of the law, right? That's where interpretation comes into play in terms of the Torah. Right, but it's not. In other words, not you and I. You know, Basin will make that interpretation.
So, according to Ribui Mir and Ribui, anything in water
would need to stop here because Kaskesis. Correct, and then you have to exclude the extreme. Now, in this particular example, this is where Ben's going to get me today, because in this particular example, so obviously we would have gone all the way to water in a cup, right?
Correct.
That's not an ocean. That's not a river. That's not a lake. It's not, you know, whatever natural body of water. It's not, but the Gemara says, oh, but that one we already have covered. Okay, so we're gonna have to go to another example, and then the other example ends up being a pit, a well, and a cistern. But even when we went klal uprato klal, we got to that very same conclusion. So in this particular formula, it's a helfnish. Okay. All right. Next part of today. As I mentioned in the beginning of today, the Gemara says that there are two psukim, the pasuk tes, pasuk yud, and we mentioned that they're superfluous because they basically get us to the same point, which is if it has fins and scales, you can eat it. That's pasuk tes. If it doesn't have fins and scales, you can't eat it. That's pasuk yud. Okay, right. But by inference, we would have figured both out. And the Gemara says one's an ase and the other one's a lo sase. Okay. The Gemara now wants to know, which is which? I'm sorry, before I get to the Gemara's question. And then the Gemara earlier said, one is sasum and one's mefurash. One's explicit and one's implicit. Which one's which? So, high sasum v'high mefurash. Samech zayinam at aleph. We are halfway down to the page. The Gemara now wants to know, which one's the explicit and which one's the implicit? Pligi bar Rav Acha v'Ravina. So the Gemara brings down a machlokas amarayim. Chad amar yesh la mefurash. The pasuk tes is a mefurash. That's explicit. Explicit meaning that it's from that pasuk the Torah goes out of its way to tell us bugs in a cup are fine. Okay. Ve'ein lo sasum. Where the next pasuk yud, the Torah is not explicit over there. V'chan amar ein lo mefurash v'yesh lo sasum, and the other amar says no, it's the exact opposite. Okay, now let's try to understand this a little bit better. My time adaman damar yesh lo mefurash. What does that mean? That the pasuk test is explicit. Am lecha minehu dekam mishtaru kelim. My time minahu dekam mishtaru kelim. Because you look at pasuk test, the Torah says et zetochlu mikol asher b'mayim. Right, this is what you're going to eat. Right, anything in water, and then the Torah ends off by saying, "Oh, sam tochilu, that you eat." So there, the Torah is telling you explicitly there are certain ones that you're allowed to eat. Okay, that's explicit. So my time adama demanda ein lo mefurash. So the Gemara says, "What about the other amaru who says that pasuk yud is mefurash?" Da haidu de kamukach ahach. No, because the other Amara says, without Pasuk Yud, you wouldn't necessarily have gotten to that conclusion because Pasuk Test just simply says, I need fins and scales. If all I had was Pasuk Test, I would have thought it always has to have fins and scales, regardless of what body of water it is. Pasuk Yud is coming to tell us, there it outlines oceans and rivers. Without Pasuk Yud, I wouldn't necessarily have concluded that Pasuk Tes is talking about, would give an allowance for animals in a kli, in a utensil. Okay, so, right, tricky argument over there in the Gemara, which Pasuk is Sus and which Pasuk is Mefurish.
You come to specify what type of water are we talking about, right? Tet doesn't mention what kind of water we're talking about. Just Abamayim is very general. Right?
No, both specify. No, test as well.
Oh, I'm sorry.
They both specify. Okay. Amar Avuna. Okay? And here we go, the halachic portion of today's Gemara. Up until now, don't get me wrong, we have halacha, it's coming out of the Gemara up until this point in the daf. Because now we know, right, bugs found in, I didn't say bugs, I mean, you know, aquatic bugs. All right, bugs found in kelim, mutter. Bugs found in wells, pits, and cisterns, mutter. Bugs found in moving ocean bodies of water, usser. Okay, that there lays a distinction. Okay, but the story doesn't stop there. I'm Rav Huna. Lo lishe in a shichra b'tzavaisa b'orsa del maparish la'el mitzavaisa v'hada nafel kasa. Okay. So even though we give a total allowance of a bug that's in a kli, so I make beer, okay, and I make beer, and you make beer by back then, you know what was popular to make beer with, right? Dates. Dates was super popular. So I take the dates and I put it in the water, and now I let the dates soak in the water, and look, there may be some bugs in there. And I know this is going to sound so funny, but so what? So what? The bugs are right. The bugs in the water, we pointed out, that's in a kli, and that would be fine. And even the bugs that are in the dates, okay. Even the bugs that are in the dates, also okay.
Why?
Yeah, right. That's the correct question. Right. Well, yes. We discussed this before. However, says Rav Huna, once you pour it over twigs, perhaps for filtering. Right? Once you pour it over twigs, now there's going to be an issue. Because what may end up happening is that those bugs will land on one of the twigs.
Get a fresh bug.
And then go back into the water. And now you're done. Because once the bug has exited and landed on a twig or on anything outside of the fruit, so now that bug falls under the category of sheretz or sheretz al haaretz. So the Gemara says, "Ihachi b'mana nami doma parsh ledafna demana v'hadar nafal amana." So the Gemara says, "Really, if that's your concern, so I don't understand why do we need the twigs? Why do we need to invoke the twigs as being a concern? Meaning, once the bugs emerge, once the bugs leave the water and cling on to some other item, so now the bugs become sheretz or sheretz al haaretz. I don't understand. Even if the bugs in the beer itself." The bug will cling to the side of the cup. Isn't that sheretz or sheretz al haaretz? So the Gemara says, no, hasam hainu revise. So the Gemara says, that's natural. That's natural, and so therefore that's not considered sheretz or sheretz al haaretz. Meaning that when is a bug going to be prohibited? When it emerges. When it leaves its natural area of growth. So, but if you, let's say, are making beer in a kli, and the bug is swimming around in there. And even if the bug clings to the side of the utensil, that's still considered revise. That's still considered its natural growth. Omenatemra detanya. Now the Gemara says, now, this is all coming from Rav Huna. Where does Rav Huna get this from? What is that? Said detanya minan l'rabas barashichan amar shashochev v'shasa mehem eino nimna. So the Gemara says that you can go to a pit. You can bend down. You can drink from the pit. And you don't have to be mesanin. You don't have to filter. Meaning just drink it up, lap it up, and you don't enjoy it, and you don't have to worry. Now, it's funny, by the way, because I think human nature is you worry. You don't want to ingest. But we're talking about now the halacha. And the halacha is that, again, we're in a pit, we're in a well, we're in a cistern. We're not in a natural flowing body of water. It's fine. Tamalam or tochelu. Mikol asher b'mayim. The heter. V'lecha dilmash parish ladafna v'hadanafel. Now, again, the Gemara says, aren't we worried that maybe the bug will crawl to the side of the cistern hang and attach itself to the side of the cistern, jump back into the water. Aren't you concerned about sheretz or sheretz al haaretz? Elahina revisei. And the answer is the same answer that we gave in defense of Rav Huna. That's natural. That's not considered now that the bug has exited the water. That's considered the bug still in its natural habitat. Hachinami haina revisei. Amalei Rav Chisel Rav Huna tain demesayelach. So the Gemara says, I'll show you a brisa. The brisa supports exactly this. Kol hasheretz hasheretz al haaretz le'rabos yavchushin shesinanam. The right sheretz hasheretz al haaretz is including what? Yavchushin, some sort of bug. It's like it's Rashi says it's like a yatush. It's like a gnat. Where? What did I do? I filtered the water, right? Rashi says here we're talking about wine. I filter the wine. Once I filter the wine, and once I find the bug on the filter, the bug you can't drink. What does that mean? Before what? Yeah, because before you filtered it, it's fine. It was Haina Revisa. That's its natural habitat. That would be fine. Okay, good. So now, right? Well, strange conclusion for the day, right? If the bug developed in a kli and it never left the contents of the kli, the confines of that kli, and even though it attached itself to the side of the kli, you're good. Enjoy it. Right? Protein. Yeah, what the...
But the definition of sheretz is that it has to be touching the ground. It's not called a sheretz. Right? That's the definition of
right. And now, once that bug, however, has entered into the world, left its natural habitat, entered into the world, either clung to the filter, or you poured the beer over the twigs and the bug's on the twig, now it's a sheretz al haaretz. It is now considered, it is entered into the land, and now, sheretz, it's aser, it's a lav, it's a negative prohibition. Amar Shmuel, we're going to do the same thing again, but now we're no longer going to talk about bugs in the water, we're now going to talk about bugs in fruits. You bite into an apple. You know the old joke, what's worse than finding a worm in an apple? And they write, and the answer, of course, is finding a half a worm in an apple. You bite into an apple. Really? It's an oldie. Okay? So you bite into the apple and the worm's in the apple. You bite into a date and you find some worms in the date. So now, right? Haina revise. So I'm a Shmuel. Okay? Now, mind you, right? In terms of the halacha, I only have a couple minutes left. Though,
right?
Yeah. We only have a couple of minutes, so stay tuned. Tomorrow, I will go through the halacha in more detail. But let's start off today by learning the Gemara. Kishas, cucumbers, shehitlia, that becomes infested with worms. Be'avya asura mishum sheretz sheretz ala aretz. What does that mean, be'avya? Look at the top Rashi on Samach Zayin Amud Beis. Rashi writes, be'oda mechuberes. While the cucumber is connected to the ground, no good. Why? Because sheretz ha'aretzi. Because it's considered like the worm is on the ground. Meaning if the cucumber is connected to the ground, it's considered like the worm is on the ground. The asura ha'tola'as lechol. You can't eat the worm. It's prohibited. The kevan da mahaleches besoch ha'kishos. V'hi mechuberes ka'karka. Because since it's connected to the cucumber, which is connected to the ground, have kemahaleches agabe karka. It's like the worm is walking on the ground. Aval tlia hitlia la'acher mikan. But if worm infestation takes place in the cucumber after it was detached from the ground, muteris ashetetze la'avir. Then it's permitted until the worm pops its head out of the cucumber. Okay, this is the opinion of Shmuel. Okay, tomorrow we're going to quote a brisa. The brisa is as broad as a support for Shmuel. The brisa will end up arguing with Shmuel. Tomorrow, we will look at Tosfos. Tosfos brings down a machlokas rishonim. Do we follow like Shmuel? Do we follow like the Braisa? Okay, all this we'll see tomorrow. I'll quote the halacha tomorrow. Okay, stay tuned for an interesting discussion. God willing, tomorrow we're going to finish the third parak of Chulin. Feels like we've been here for a long time. We have. And we'll start the fourth parak of Chulin. Everyone have a great day.